Chapter 79. You hear, and if you keep quiet and don't stir, I won't damage you. But, if you move hand or foot till half past 12 o'clock, I shall alter the expression of your countenance so completely, that the next time you look in the glass you'll ask whether you're gone out of town, and then you're likely to come back again. So sit down. I will, apostrophe responded the victim of mistakes. And down sat Mr. Trot, and down sat the boots too, exactly opposite him, with the stick ready for immediate action in case of emergency. Long and dreary were the hours that followed. The bell of Great Winglebury Church had just struck 10, and 2 hours and a half would probably elapse before succor arrived. For half an hour, the noise occasioned by shutting up the shops, in the street beneath, beckoned something like life in the town, and rendered Mr. Trot's situation a little less insupportable. But, when even he ceased, and nothing was heard beyond the occasional rattling of a postchaise as it drove up the yard to change horses, and then drove away again, or the clattering of horses' hoofs in the stables behind, it became almost unbearable. The boots occasionally moved an inch or two, to knock superfluous bits of wax off the candles, which were burning low, but instantaneously resumed his former position, and as he remembered to have heard, somewhere or other, that the human eye had an unfailing effect in controlling mad people, he kept his solitary organ of vision constantly fixed on Mr. Alexander Trot. That unfortunate individual stared at his companion in his turn, until his features grew more and more indistinct, his hair gradually less red, and the room more misty and obscure. Mr. Alexander Trot fell into a sound sleep, from which he was awakened by a rumbling in the street, and a cry of chaise and four for number 25. A bustle on the stairs succeeded. The room door was hastily thrown open. And Mr. Joseph Overton entered, followed by four stout waiters, and Mrs. Williamson, the stout landlady of the Winglebury Arms. Mr. Overton. Exclaimed Mr. Alexander Trot, jumping up in a frenzy. Look at this man, sir. Consider the situation in which I have been placed for 3 hours past. The person you sent to guard me, sir, was a madman, a raging, ravaging, furious madman. Bravo. Whispered Mr. Overton. Poor dear. Said the compassionate Mrs. Williamson. Mad people always thinks other people's mad. Poor dear. Ejaculated Mr. Alexander Trot. What the devil do you mean by poor dear? Are you the landlady of this house? Yes, replied the stout old lady. Don't exert yourself, there's a dear. Consider your health, now, do. Exert myself. Shouted Mr. Alexander Trot. It's a mercy, ma'am, that I have any breath to exert myself with. I might have been assassinated 3 hours ago by that one-eyed monster with the oakum head. How dare you have a madman, ma'am, how dare you have a madman, to assault and terrify the visitors to your house? I'll never have another, said Mrs. Williamson, casting a look of reproach at the mayor. Capital, whispered Overton again, as he enveloped Mr. Alexander Trot in a thick traveling cloak. Capital, sir. Exclaimed Trot, aloud. It's horrible. The very recollection makes me shudder. I'd rather fight four duels in 3 hours, if I survived the first three, than I'd sit for that time face to face with a madman. Keep it up, my lord, as you go downstairs, whispered Overton, your bill is paid, and your portmanteau in the chaise. And then he added aloud, now, waiters, the gentleman's ready. At this signal, the waiters crowded round Mr. Alexander Trot. One took one arm, another, the other, a third, walked before with a candle, the fourth, behind with another candle. The boots and Mrs. Williamson brought up the rear, and downstairs they went. Mr. Alexander Trott expressing alternately at the very top of his voice either his feigned reluctance to go, or his unfeigned indignation at being shut up with a madman. Mr. Overton was waiting at the chaise door, the boys were ready mounted, and a few hostlers and stable nondescripts were standing round to witness the departure of the mad gentleman. Apostrophe Mr. Alexander Trott's foot was on the step, when he observed, which the dim light had prevented his doing before, a figure seated in the chaise, closely muffled up in a cloak like his own. Who's that? Apostrophe he inquired of Overton, in a whisper. Hush, hush, apostrophe replied the mayor. The other party, of course. Apostrophe, the other party. Apostrophe exclaimed Trott, with an effort to retreat. Yes, yes, you'll soon find that out, before you go far, I should think, but make a noise, you'll excite suspicion, if you whisper to me so much. Apostrophe, I won't go in this chaise. Apostrophe shouted Mr. Alexander Trott, all his original fears recurring with tenfold violence. I shall be assassinated, I shall be apostrophe, bravo, bravo, apostrophe whispered Overton. I'll push you in. Apostrophe, but I won't go, apostrophe exclaimed Mr. Trott. Help here, help. They're carrying me away against my will. This is a plot to murder me. Apostrophe, poor dear. Apostrophe said Mrs. Williamson again. Now, boys, put 'em along, apostrophe cried the mayor, pushing Trott in and slamming the door. Off with you, as quick as you can, and stop for nothing till you come to the next stage all right. Apostrophe, horses are paid. Tom, apostrophe screamed Mrs. Williamson. And away went the chaise, at the rate of 14 miles an hour, with Mr. Alexander Trott and Miss Julia Manners carefully shut up in the inside. Mr. Alexander Trott remained coiled up in one corner of the chaise, and his mysterious companion in the other, for the first 2 or 3 miles, Mr. Trott edging more and more into his corner, as he felt his companion gradually edging more and more from hers, and vainly endeavoring in the darkness to catch a glimpse of the furious face of the supposed horse hunter. We may speak now, apostrophe said his fellow traveler, at length. The postboys can neither see nor hear us. Apostrophe, that's not Hunter's voice. Apostrophe thought Alexander, astonished. Dear Lord Peter. Apostrophe said Miss Julia, most winningly, putting her arm on Mr. Trott's shoulder. Dear Lord Peter. Not a word? Apostrophe, why, it's a woman. Apostrophe exclaimed Mr. Trott, in a low tone of excessive wonder. Ah! Whose voice is that? Apostrophe said Julia, 'tis not Lord Peter's. Apostrophe, no, it's mine, apostrophe replied Mr. Trott. Yours? Apostrophe ejaculated Miss Julia Manners, a strange man. Gracious heaven! How came you here? Apostrophe, whoever you are, you might have known that I came against my will, ma'am, apostrophe replied Alexander, for I made noise enough when I got in. Apostrophe, do you come from Lord Peter? Apostrophe inquired Miss Manners. Confound Lord Peter, apostrophe replied Trott pettishly. I don't know any Lord Peter. I never heard of him before tonight, when I've been Lord Peter'd by one and Lord Peter'd by another, till I verily believe I'm mad, or dreaming apostrophe, whither are we going? Apostrophe inquired the lady tragically. How should I know, ma'am? Apostrophe replied Trott with singular coolness, for the events of the evening had completely hardened him. Stop, stop. Apostrophe cried the lady, letting down the front glasses of the chaise. Stay, my dear ma'am. Apostrophe said Mr. Trott, pulling the glasses up again with one hand, and gently squeezing Miss Julia's waist with the other. There is some mistake here. Give me till the end of this stage to explain my share of it. We must go so far. You cannot be set down here alone, at this hour of the night. Apostrophe, the lady consented. The mistake was mutually explained. Mr. Trout was a young man, had highly promising whiskers, an undeniable tailor, and an insinuating address. He wanted nothing but valor, and who wants that with $3,000 a year? The lady had this, and more. She wanted a young husband, and the only course open to Mr. Trout, to retrieve his disgrace, was a rich wife. So, they came to the conclusion that it would be a pity to have all this trouble and expense for nothing, and that as they were so far on the road already, they had better go to Gretna Green and marry each other, and they did so. And the very next preceding entry in the blacksmith's book was an entry of the marriage of Emily Brown with Horace Hunter. Mr. Hunter took his wife home and begged pardon, and was pardoned. And Mr. Trout took his wife home, begged pardon too, and was pardoned also. And Lord Peter, who had been detained beyond his time by drinking champagne and riding a steeplechase, went back to the Honorable Augustus Flair's, and drank more champagne, and rode another steeplechase, and was thrown and killed. And Horace Hunter took great credit to himself for practicing on the cowardice of Alexander Trout. And all these circumstances were discovered in time, and carefully noted down. And if you ever stop a week at the Winglebury Arms, they will give you just this account of the great Winglebury duel. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.